Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Big Life Podcast on Full Service Radio. We are Lina Salazar
and Ingrid Vaishus,
broadcasting live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. Every week on the Big Life, we hold inspiring and honest conversations with experts, leaders, and holistic professionals who live and help others live big, fulfilling lives by redefining success, beauty, health, and happiness. The Big Life is a provoking invitation to mindset shift and gives you the tools to go from stress and overwhelm to happy and thriving. I am Lina Salazar, a health coach and creator of the Food Sanity Program. I work with women who want to feel healthy, energized, confident, and be consistent with food without fad diets or stress.
And I'm Ingrid Vaishus, also a health coach. I help my clients discover achievable, sustainable strategies to better health so they can avoid burnout and thrive at home and work.
Ingrid, crazy statistic. Did you know that DC is the second state with the highest alcohol consumption per capita in the country, just behind New Hampshire? And this isn't surprising, given how normalized alcohol has become. We drink while getting a manicure, grocery shopping, and we both know that happy hours are the way we network par excellence. Have we normalized excessive drinking to celebrate, to relax, to cope with stress? And can we live big lives without alcohol? That's the huge question. And today, to answer these questions, we are joined by Laura Silverman, the founder of the Sobriety Collective, a blog and resource hub dedicated to the sober lifestyle. As a tireless advocate for booze-free living, Laura also helped start the DC chapter of Sans Bar and recently launched Booze Free in DC, a website to showcase the sober-friendly scene in the DMV. Laura, welcome. It's so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much.
We're excited about this topic. I think it's such an interesting topic because it's changing so much and the conversation around it is changing so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I know we're going to get right into this, but DC is changing as we speak. I mean, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
And if this came up maybe even just a year ago, I don't think I would have been on a podcast in DC about this. So
I feel like that's the great place to start. Tell us a little bit about your story, your relationship with alcohol. Like, give us a little bit of the insight so that we can get to where we are.
So I started drinking in college, like a lot of people do, and I didn't realize that all people didn't drink in college, but I definitely got into binge drinking, and not just because I wanted to drink, because I had some mental health concerns like anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and panic disorder. And none of these were really diagnosed at the time, but I knew that I had a noisy brain. And I was also bullied for years and years, and school was just difficult. So I wanted to reinvent myself, and kind of the cliched story. But I found that drinking helped me relax in the moment. I was able to quote unquote connect with others, even though they weren't authentic connections, and I was able to kind of quiet the noise in my head. But my drinking kind of took off pretty quickly, and I only drank for 6 years. And by the time I had turned 24, I'd been hospitalized twice for alcohol poisoning. I had so many things that I had physically lost, and then a lot of things like dignity and self-respect and other things, you know, other facets of myself that were sort of slipping away. By the time I had just turned 24, I knew that alcohol had become a problem in my life, but I didn't know how I could live without it. But that sort of was the launching point for me. I knew I needed help. I had just sort of come to in a hospital in New York City, and I don't really remember much about what happened, but I knew that I had kind of escaped some pretty dire consequences, and the fact that I was still alive was a miracle, really. And I'm not a religious person, but something kind of inside of me shifted. And I had said many a time before that I never want to drink again, or I'm definitely like going to tone it down, or I've imposed limits on myself, like only 3 drinks tonight, only 2 drinks tonight, only wine tonight, only beer tonight, only like liquor, you know, every kind of self-imposed limit that I could think of, I tried, and none of it really worked. And so on July 14th, 2007, I just had this like moment where I was like, I just can't do this anymore. And I decided to get help. And so I got treatment when I came back to DC, and that started my journey. I've been sober since. I'm going on 37 this May, so awesome. I'll be sober for 13 years in the summer. Oh, which wow. is crazy.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
And if you asked me before if you could have fun without drinking, and we'll get into this, yeah. I was like, I would have said hell no. I don't think, is swearing okay?
Yes.
Yes.
It's fine.
Well, I won't say anything. I'll just say hell no. I didn't think it would have been possible. So
yeah. So when we were talking, and I think you made a distinction. You said, I'm not an alcoholic. I abuse alcohol, right?
Yeah. Well, I said that before we
started
went
the
live.
Show. Yeah. And I think that it's an important conversation that we, like, I want to mm-hmm. hear why you make that distinction and what, where it comes from.
Yeah. So I'm not a doctor, but I do know a little bit about the substance use disorder range, which can range from mild substance use all the way to severe substance use disorder, which is also categorized as addiction or alcoholism, like textbook addiction and alcoholism, which is not just a psychological dependency on the substance, but also a physical dependency. And if you quit too abruptly, there are severe consequences of withdrawal, which can be dangerous. So if people are actually addicted, I would recommend that they go to treatment and they go, you know, get detox, because you want to do that safely. What I had was a type of substance use disorder that made me psychologically dependent on alcohol. And so I don't consider myself an alcoholic, because in a lot of ways I think that puts me back in the problem. But I respect people who self-identify that way if it's part of the program that they practice. Yeah. And that program that sort of people kind of hush-hush about is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was part of my journey, and I don't bash it. I think it helps millions of people. I also know that it doesn't help just as many millions, and there need to be options. Yeah. So that's really one of the reasons why I started the Sobriety Collective almost five years ago, because I wanted to give people options and to let them know that it was okay if they felt alienated by X, Y, or Z. And in my case, it was the 12 steps. And by the way, I worked the steps. I had a sponsor. I very much was a part of the community, and it gave me so much in my life. So I don't bash them, but it served its purpose for me, and I was ready for the next step of my life. I was ready to phase up to whatever was next. And back in the day, you know, the late aughts, if you will, there wasn't a lot of talk about other options for people who were going through similar issues. And there certainly wasn't any kind of mention of this sober curiosity trend, which we see everywhere now. So it was either kind of like AA or nothing.
Yeah, there was like no nuance.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back a little bit and unpack a few of the things that you said, because I like what you said about the psychological dependence. I was also in a 12-step program for overeaters, and so I understand the 12-step program, and I like how a lot of the focus is on psychological dependence, right? Mm-hmm. On sort of like mastering your emotional triggers. So can you speak a little bit of how the coping with strong emotions, stress, anxiety, all those other issues that you were facing, how that is linked to your relationship with alcohol?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me see if I understand your question.
I can repeat it.
I think I understand it, but it's possible that I am getting into a different nuance. Yeah. But are we talking about when I was using alcohol or where I am now in terms of how I deal with emotional
triggers? We would love to hear both. We would love, but let's go back to the past, because I would love our listeners to see if they can relate to your experience of mm-hmm. how you use alcohol to cope with strong emotions, with stress, which is the day-to-day of a Washingtonian.
Right. So, yeah, absolutely. Alcohol is a depressant. Mm-hmm. It's a downer, but people use it for so many different reasons. And just because we're talking about my story, I used it if I was feeling... Well, okay. I don't think I use it so much when I was feeling down, but I definitely wanted it to amplify whatever I was feeling. And I'm kind of stalling because I don't remember a whole lot, both because it was a long time ago, and also there are a lot of memories that I probably will never get back again, and that's due to blacking out. And I'll go to the emotional triggers in just a second, but there's something that is kind of a nuance that a lot of people don't know about, and that's the difference between blacking out and passing out. And a lot of people think it's the same thing, and I thought the same for a while. So passing out is when you just, like, pass out, fall asleep, basically, due to too much alcohol consumption. Blacking out is when you're completely, you have the appearance of being lucidly awake, and you're doing things. You could be driving, which is extremely dangerous. You could be having sex. You could be having a conversation. You could be at work, and you have no recollection of it whatsoever because there's something in your brain that's going on that has blocked those receptors. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So anyway, going back a little bit, and I don't even remember why I brought that up, but
we're going to talk about emotional triggers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I'm very ADD. This is also part of everything. Mm-hmm. So I was a weekend binge drinker. And so I didn't always go out with the intention of, like, if I was super, super happy, I just want to, like, continue that happiness through alcohol. Or if I was, like, really feeling low, continue, like, feeling, especially in my emotions. But I do know that I used it to cope with my anxiety, mm-hmm. and I used it to cope with the other stuff that was going on in my head. And you know what? It can still get loud up in there. And so when I was actively drinking, I just wanted to feel normal, which is ironic to use a drug and a toxin to feel normal, but it's what I chose. And temporarily, it helped sort of diminish the noise in my head. But usually what happens with a hangover for a quote-unquote normal person is it's extremely uncomfortable. And you already have those feelings of, like, shame and guilt and anxiety. And when you couple it with an actual anxiety disorder, it was just absolutely terrible. And so all the reasons that I might have drank in the first place were completely erased during my hangover. So I know that even if I don't quite remember if I was feeling super happy or super low and I would drink because of those things, but I knew that I drank to cope with my anxiety issues. And I can see now, with hindsight and time being sober, that that was a very unhealthy coping mechanism. And there are so many better ways now for me. And I can get into those if you want.
I think we'll talk about that in the second part.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It gets more practical. Sure.
Okay.
You also mentioned something that I think we're hearing more and more of. It's that term, sober curious. And mm-hmm. I think it's good to, like, unpack it. Tell us a little bit more about what it is. Tell our listeners if they haven't heard. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? What does it look like? I personally find it fascinating. I think it's really interesting.
So I think the sentiment behind the term has sort of been around for a while, and I'm sure that in my drinking days I dabbled with sober curiosity without calling it that. Yeah. I was like, there's got to be ways to have fun without alcohol, and mm-hmm. But there weren't a lot of fun booze-free beverages back then, and we can talk about that in the second part where we get mm-hmm. practical and you mm-hmm. know, give people tips. But Ruby Warrington, she's a British woman who lives in New York City now. She authored a book called Sober Curious, and there's a subtitle, which I don't remember, but it's basically about, like, feeling clearer and happier and just like better without alcohol. And basically what sober curiosity is when someone wants to re-examine or examine the relationship that they have with alcohol and to see if it is serving any purpose in their life and to examine the reasons why they're drinking. So to kind of like really go into mindfulness and awareness and like almost step outside of yourself and see why it is that you're drinking, like use yourself as sort of as a scientific experiment and be the scientist and say like, why am I drinking? Am I trying to numb out feelings? Am I trying to amplify feelings? Am I trying to change something about myself through the use of a substance that ends up, you know, sort of transforming your reactions or your actions? If you find in your discovery that you are drinking only with certain meals to sort of amplify the culinary experience and you have a drink or half a drink, you know, once a week or something like that, I mean, that doesn't sound like it's a problem. And I am certainly not an advocate for removing alcohol from the shelves of, you know, the world. But if people find that it is a problem or is sort of becoming a problem, they don't have to wait till they have a quote unquote bottom where they need intensive treatment. They can kind of step away from the substance if they're able to do so safely. And again, I have to stress that because not everyone can do the sober curious thing. Some people need treatment.
Yeah. I like that. What I like about the sober curiosity thing is that it removes or it frees people from sort of like the stigma that's around recovery or alcoholism, right? Like I can be curious about sobriety without saying I am an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I like that. And it's also a concept that would help me actually that I think about it with my clients because a lot of them discover that alcohol can be a trigger to mixed with like anxiety and stress and self-criticism. It can be a trigger to overeating or losing control around food and then feeling frustrated and going into these
or sex, or everything.
So it goes into this loop. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I like what you said at the end about accepting and just like being more intentional about your decisions and mindfulness about your consumption, right? Rather than restricting and making it a thing of about abstinence.
Yeah, I think it's like the nuance. I think I love the idea that you can explore and you can experiment and ask questions and look at things, and it doesn't have to be an all or nothing approach.
Yeah.
And for some people that doesn't work, and I get it, but I think it is useful so that we can examine and look at where we're at, how it impacts, how do we feel, do we sleep better when when we're not drinking, do we feel better, do we have more energy, like all of these questions. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a black or white, and I really think that that's something we talk a lot about on the show. It's like not everything needs to be an extreme.
There's a middle ground,
and it's a very big gray area, and it might work for some, and it's about like asking the questions and being curious.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think it also, like, maybe this is a good segue to talk about the Sobriety Collective. But
we need to go for a break. Go for it.
Culture. I want to talk about culture. Like, that curiosity about sobriety also brings more awareness about how culture is shaping our relationship with alcohol and how we are surrounded by prompts to drink alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely. And really quickly, I just want to say that the whole sober curiosity thing lends itself really well to what I like to call, and I don't think I termed it but the sobriety spectrum. You don't have to be fully abstinent to live a healthier lifestyle, but the spectrum, like anything in life where there are spectrums, it ranges from people who need to be abstinent because of recovery and whatever that looks like to them, 12 steps, SMART, other things. They could be abstinent for medical or religious reasons. They could be pregnant. They could be going through some things that they need to just like take a pause from alcohol. You could be training for a marathon. You could be sober for life, non-recovery related. Yeah. I mean, there are just so many reasons why someone would want to sort of dabble in sober curiosity. So I just wanted to say that the sobriety spectrum is huge for me.
That's important. And then
culture. Lena, can you just ask me that question one more time? Because I forgot already.
Well, it was more like a comment, and like I wanted your insights on it, your opinion about like that sobriety. What is it again?
Sober curious.
Sober curious allows you to also be more mindful and aware of how culture is sort of like promoting alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
At the manicure place, at the supermarket.
I don't want to throw shade in anyone's direction, but I did just ironically get a follow on Instagram by like a wine and tap dancing studio in the DMV area, and I don't understand why. My Instagram is that I'm like a booze-free babe, so why would like a tap, which is why it's the culture aspect is so important, because not only is it everywhere in the hospitality industry, and that's sort of to be expected, and I'm not blaming the hospitality industry for promoting alcohol per se, but when it infiltrates into the wellness industry,
yep.
I have a huge problem with that. When you have wine and Pilates and wine and tap dancing and like heavy beer consumption and CrossFit and weightlifting and mindful, like meditation and paired with alcohol, I mean, it's just, it goes against everything that wellness is supposed to stand for. The thing that's really cool about Sober Curiosity is that it does allow you to have that sort of observer, that mindful awareness, that sort of scientist in you that can say, like, yeah, this is BS. Like, you know, society shouldn't be feeding me all these messages that alcohol is so normalized. We've gotten the messages that it's normalized for socialization, but when it's normalized for wellness, I think that's just a huge red flag, and it really grinds my gears, and I have so many things to say about that. But yeah, it's just, it's everywhere. And so I think it just takes a little bit of creativity to navigate the world, not just booze-free, but with sober curiosity, because I don't think that everyone needs to quit alcohol for the rest of their lives.
So I think we'll take a short break right now, and then stay tuned for the second part of our conversation with Laura Silverman, the founder of the Sobriety Collective and creator of Booze Free in DC, a website to showcase the sober-friendly scene in the DMV.
Welcome back to the Big Life Podcast on Full Service Radio. We are Lina Salazar
and Ingrid Vaishus,
broadcasting live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. Our guest today is Laura Silverman, the founder of the Sobriety Collective and, more recently, Booze Free in D.C., a website who showcases a sober-friendly scene in the DMV. In the first part of our conversation, we talked to Laura about her relationship with alcohol and the Sober Curious movement. So, in this second part, as you know, Laura, we like talking about getting more practical and giving our listeners tips, tools, resources. So are you okay with starting to talk about the Sobriety Collective and Booze Free DC and how are these great resources for people who are interested in and curious about sobriety?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, thank you so much for having me here. Mm-hmm. It means a lot to me. And for any listener who hasn't been to the Line DC, it is fantastic. I'm so happy to be here. So, let's talk about tools, because everyone needs a toolbox that works for them. So I started the Sobriety Collective in April of 2015 because I needed something that didn't exist at the time. I wanted a place where I could connect with people and find other people like me who had sort of alternative recovery or alternative sobriety that didn't kind of fall into the cookie cutter sort of traditional recovery, which at the time was very pervasive in the recovery niche world. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that if I was looking for something like that, there was a chance that maybe someone else was too. And so I started the Sobriety Collective mostly to be a hub of resources for people. I have blogs, podcasts, websites, coaching programs for people, and books, lots and lots of books, for people who want to add sort of those types of tools to their toolkit. Mm-hmm. But also there are lists and lists of resources for people who actually need to seek help for themselves or for a loved one. And the other aspect of that blog was to showcase creatives who are sober and to dispel the myth that when you put down a substance, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, that your creativity dies. Because there's so much in society and culture that sort of glorifies the alcoholic writer or the addicted painter and this sort of tortured artist that we see in so many movies and read about is really kind of an exception to the rule. And so I wanted to show that people are flourishing with their creative lives when they get sober, or if they don't have to be in recovery to get sober. And maybe they were sober their whole lives. And in the beginning of my journey, I didn't always sort of identify with those people who are self-proclaimed straight edge, which means that they've never even touched a substance in their whole lives. And I was like, oh, they can't possibly understand what I've been through, you know, like it's different. But now with age and time, it's not different. It's different in a good way. And for someone who's, you know, never picked up a substance in their life, I say more power to them. Maybe they had a family member who had issues with a drug or with alcohol. So that was really the reason why I started that blog, and it has grown quite a lot. But recently I felt a little stuck with it. I felt like I was kind of just greasing the wheels and they weren't really going anywhere. And I needed a new creative project because I'm a creative myself. And truth be told, last year I was really trying to move to Austin, where there's another line. because I'd been here for 14 years and wanted a change in my life. And the first time I went to Austin, Texas, I just fell in love with it there. And I still love it. For a variety of reasons that didn't work out. And so I was like, well, let me reinvest my energy in DC in a different way. You know, I've been here so long that I've got to try some new things so that I can rediscover the city and the environment with new eyes. And so what can I do to do that? And one of the things I did was I joined a roller derby league, Free State Roller Derby, plug, which I love. And it's really great for fitness. It's great for community. And it's just something that I'd been wanting to do. And it's just different. And that's part of, you know, my toolkit is fitness and community. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was like, I've always loved traveling, and like the two of you, I grew up in places that were not the United States. My dad was a diplomat. I grew up overseas. Hablo español también. And so I love traveling, and, you know, whenever I pick up a travel guidebook, you know, it's not always every single travel guidebook, but there are so many that have a focus on alcohol.
The bar scene.
And bar scenes, and wineries, and distilleries, and breweries, mm-hmm. and so many alcohol sort of dependent places. And so I was like, well, wouldn't it be cool if there was a travel guidebook of any kind of place? But I was thinking, well, DC, because that's my home right now, that sort of took people on a tour of the area through a booze-free lens, through a mm-hmm. wellness lens. And so a book is still my goal, and I want to do that by the end of the year. So if any of you listening are in publishing, hit me up. But I was like, well, I don't have to wait for the book to come out or to be written by myself to start something. So I was like, I'm going to start this website and just curate and create content. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've always loved doing with the Sobriety Collective and with a couple of other things that I've done, including Zero Proof Nation, which I can talk about in a little bit, is sharing people's stories and sharing others. So I do like a little bit of the spotlight. I mean, I love karaoke. I love mm-hmm. the fact that you've, you know, asked me to be a guest here. I'm enjoying that. But I love sharing other people. And so I've just started this interview series on Booze Free in DC, where we're interviewing prominent and not prominent and folks who are booze free or almost booze free, and having them take us on a tour of their DMV. And maybe if they just live in the city, it could just be DC, but because we have so many people who live in Maryland, who live in Virginia, yeah. or work in DC or whatever, like they love the whole DMV. And so mm-hmm. I wanted the site to really focus on food, beverages, which are really up and coming, mm-hmm. You know, zero proof cocktails, but also coffee and tea houses and juiceries. And then things to do. There's so many amazing things to do that don't require alcohol here. And if people don't know about them, well, then they can find out about them. You know, concerts and just like a whole range of things. I'm just blanking out as I was about to tell you. And then the wellness section, which includes fitness and meditation and nature, which is very big for me. So I'm only just glossing over this, but I thought it was just a really important thing to talk about the place that you live in from kind of an alternative perspective, from a wellness lens. And I know that that probably really speaks to you because of, you know, the work that you do.
That's such a great, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's such a great idea. And precisely, let's talk about the tools. You talked about your toolkit, and you talked about nature and meditation, and I also saw sort of like your interviews, which are great, and some of these people share their tools, right? What's in their toolkit to keep them sort of like centered and living a big life. So why don't you share what are your favorite tools or what's on your toolkit?
Yeah.
And if there are any other suggestions beyond that toolkit to our listeners.
Sure, yeah. So there are a few things that I can just rattle off that are extremely helpful to me. One of the biggest ones is nature. When I am connected to nature, I feel both infinitesimally small and huge at the same time. Like I'm connected to the universe, and I love being outside and listening. And you can really practice meditation, which is also another of my tools, when you're listening to your surroundings, when you're hearing the birds chirp, when you're listening to the water sort of trickle, you know, across the rocks or wherever you might be. So nature is huge. Moving my body is really big, whether that is outside in nature or at roller derby or doing one of my beach body workouts. I'm doing the 100 morning meltdown, not in the morning though, because I don't like morning, in the evening. And Daybreaker, by the way, is a great thing to do, where it's like yoga and sober rave
and community,
community and it's booze free. It's all of the things. Yay, Daybreaker DC.
At 6 a.m.
And I think I'm going to go to the next one in March, but I really don't like mornings.
It's hard. It's
before so 6 sleep is also part of my toolkit. I make sure to get a lot of rest. I drink a lot of water, and people are always commenting on how I don't look, sound, or act my so, and then community. So for me, that's my family of origin and also my family of choice. And as a friend, called it framily. So, you know, I love spending time with my parents and my brothers, sister-in-law and nephews and then my extended family, but also friends that I've met through communities like we met at Behold Her, through roller derby, through my online sobriety stuff, and friends that I've had, you know, since college, who I've maintained friendships with. So community, nature, exercise, and reading. I love reading. I'm a very slow reader, so I have a habit of collecting books and not always picking them up and opening them. But I love reading recovery memoirs and personal development books, and then sometimes a fiction book. Yeah.
So,
and music.
So I'm curious, because I feel like many of our listeners will be like, okay, what if I don't think I have a problem with alcohol, but I might want to test things out, but how do I start? And there's two pieces of that in my head. One is, where do I start? And then how do I navigate a culture that might be kind of resistant to me going down this path? So like the party scene or the happy hour scene or being, I don't know, at a gathering and being like, oh, I'm not drinking. And then the response is usually one of like, oh, why not? And if you're a woman, it's
are you pregnant?
Yeah. Or like, so
only with the food, maybe.
Exactly.
Just kidding. So, I shouldn't have said that. But that's how I feel sometimes.
So, so like the two part question is like, where does one person start personally? And then how do you cope with the external pressure that might come from making that choice of experimenting?
Because your life changes, right?
Yeah. I mean,
your
just friendship, like, just like parenting, which I've heard from my friends who are parents, like your life absolutely does change. And sometimes it doesn't always feel in the beginning like it's for the better.
Yeah.
But I have to say that for my life, it absolutely does change for the better. There are two additional tools which speak exactly to this question that you asked me, Ingrid. And that one of them that I didn't have a chance to mention yet is therapy. And the other one is booze-free beverages, which are more... what's the word? Pervasive? Which are
more becoming more common.
They're becoming more common. So if someone has questions about, like, do I have a problem with alcohol? There are a variety of checklists that they can take. Chances are, if someone is asking if they have a problem with alcohol, it probably means that there is some awareness there that there might already be a problem. And usually your intuition is your biggest guide. So I would listen to yourself, and a lot of that does come with that sober, curious observer in you. But I would also encourage seeking help when appropriate, if appropriate, for your substance use, for your mental health. I'm a huge advocate for therapy, and mental health is just as important as physical health, and it's all intertwined anyway. We're all in this, we have a body, which includes like a brain, a soul, and then physical organs. And so mental health is just another part of your health. And then in terms of how to navigate without alcohol, there are so many things that you can put in a cup nowadays that are delicious and nutritious and kind of sexy at the same time that don't include alcohol. And if anyone has a problem that you're not drinking, chances are it's like putting up a mirror to them. And if they have a problem with you not drinking alcohol, it usually means that they might have a problem themselves and they're not comfortable seeing you sort of be subversive to what's considered normal. And so I would encourage people to try out different restaurants, and if they're comfortable with still continuing to go to bars, because some people can't, and I wasn't able to in the beginning, but going to restaurants and bars and asking for a zero-proof cocktail if they don't already have one on the menu. In a lot of places, like the Columbia Room and other spots in the city, have really great zero-proof beverages. And then I'm a fan of kombucha, although people do need to be a little careful because there is trace alcohol in there, and sometimes it can be more than others. But there's just so much that can be tried out. That sounds grammatically strange, but there are a lot of beverage options, and also props to DC because there are a lot of made in DC brands of Switchel and kombucha and shrubs and all sorts of things that are healthy alternatives to alcohol. So there's a lot that people can drink socially without feeling like they're left out. And then if someone really does need help, there are a wide variety of resources, and I haven't updated it in a while, but there people are more than welcome to go to my Get Help section on the Sorority Collective, because I've got a lot out there for people to just peruse. I think it's just a matter of like seeking help if you need it and knowing that it's okay to do so, because it's just like going to a doctor for anything else.
And it requires a lot of curiosity, right? Like check a podcast, go on Instagram, look at influencers. Like, I know you had one of the interviews with Annie Grace, which I really like her work and Naked Mind. And I see that you have a book in your hand, Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker. I haven't read it, but I ran into the book and looked at it, and I was really interested in it. So like additional resources like that, like books. Do you have any other books that you could recommend to our listeners in addition to that one? Because I'm sure
Good. I mean, I absolutely recommend Quit Like a Woman. I'm going to see Holly tonight after this, actually, at the Wing. There's another woman who she had a podcast with named Laura McCowan, and she just wrote a book called We Are the Luckiest. My favorite sort of recovery memoir is Blackout by Sarah Heppala, and the subtitle is Remembering the Things I Drank to Forget. And so I really identify with that. I strongly recommend reading Sober Curious by Ruby Warrington. That speaks really well to people who may not feel like they need to read a recovery memoir to get tips, but rather to see how they can reevaluate their relationship with alcohol and see if it's serving them. And then a book that really helped me, and I don't know if it's been updated since the time I read it, but it's called Sober for Good, and it's by a woman named Anne Fletcher. And it was the first book that I ever saw a mention of things other than AA as options for people who are looking for resources. And so I just encourage people to be curious, observe, and there are loads of books out there, lots of great lots of great resources.
I feel like this is a good way to start winding down. I know we could talk about this for hours. Yeah. It's just really interesting, and I think that the way we're talking about it now more and more is really allowing for nuance, right? And
yeah, that's so important. Absolutely.
So what does living a big life look like and mean to you?
It means being my... living my best life, like Oprah would be proud, and just being the best possible version of me, knowing that like anything in life and recovery, there are always ups and downs, and as long as there are ups and downs kind of going in an upward trending direction, but it just means being authentic and listening to my intuition, and I can already think of some things that I need to sort of tweak in my life as I say that, but just leveling up. And surrounding myself with people who care about me and vice versa.
And what is one thing that you're excited about?
I'm excited about Booze Free in DC and the places that it could take me and the places that I could take others. Mm-hmm. And just showcasing that it is not only possible, but it's also really cool to live a booze free lifestyle in a city that has glamorized alcohol culture. And I think that you can apply that to anywhere you live. And it's all about living intentionally and healthfully.
Awesome. And where can people find you if they want to connect with you?
All over the place. Instagram is where I'm most active. So my personal Instagram is at We Are Sober. And my Booze Free in DC is at Booze Free in DC.
You won't miss that.
Yeah, and then there are a bunch of link trees where you can find different articles and different sub parts of my website. I love connecting with people. I really, really do. So if anyone wants to reach out to me, please do. And I have met so many people for coffee and just like, or a zero proof cocktail. And just like, you know, like I'm a person. Yeah. I create things, but I want friends too. And so if you're looking for someone to connect with and talk about this, I would love that.
Awesome. Laura, this was a great show. A source of wealth. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we are looking forward to reading your book.
One day, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. By the end of the year.
You said a year. So. Well, you know, 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. We're looking forward to reading that guide. Thank you
we'll
so much for joining
up.
Us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Ingrid, this is a very important conversation. I don't think I knew how deep this could go. Definitely worth having another episode about this topic, especially in a city like DC. I like several things that Laura said, and one is that how this culture that sort of like normalizes alcohol and binge drinking, etc., it also infiltrates the wellness arena, and how that is something to be aware of. And I liked how the sober curious thing allows people to be more intentional and gain awareness and sort of like turn on their antenna about like how culture is pushing these things on them and determining their behaviors. And the other thing is that build your own toolkit, right? And Laura talked about her toolkit, like the things that she knows keeps her centered. And I think that's very useful for our listeners.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting is this conversation you and I have in show after show, right? It's really going back to the basics. What was part of her toolkit? Sleeping, drinking water, being outside in nature, getting back into yourself, trusting your intuition. All of these things that it's basically coming back to ourselves and allowing us to find the path that works for us.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter what the substance abuse is or is it stress, substance abuse, overeating, the answers are always coming back to that basics.
They're within you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think the other part of it is community, right? Building community.
Yeah.
We need to find support.
That one's a powerful one. And it will be actually one of the topics in one of future episodes of the Big Life podcast. But don't miss next week's episode. We are celebrating St. Valentine's, the Big Life Podcast Way. We'll explore how the transient, okay, and overachieving nature of DC residents results in a very particular and often hard to navigate dating scene. So don't miss this episode next week.
So yeah, and again, thank you so much for joining us. If you have questions, comments, ideas for guests, don't hesitate to reach out to us. I'm Ingrid_wellness on Instagram.
And I am @live.well.way.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.